This episode of Fuel for the Soul is powered by ASICS. Head over to ASICS.com and sign up for a one ASICS account. It's completely free, and when you sign up, you'll receive 10% off your first purchase. You'll also gain access to exclusive colorways on ASICS.com, free standard shipping, special birthday month discounts, and more.
Hey, this is Thomas with Believe in the Run.
This is Megan with Believe in the Run.
And this is Megan with Featherstone Nutrition.
A.K.A. the Feather Duster.
Ooh, I got a duster.
Yeah. Well, you did that story about how you were getting yelled at or catcalled while you ran in the 4 p.m. hour, which, why were you running at 4 p.m. instead of 4 a.m.? Because, like, that's not your mode.
It's not my mode, and I don't like it at all, but... I was in the ER with my kid until 2:30 a.m. We literally got home at 2:30, and I'm like, to get up in an hour and a half and run like that is not happening. And so we slept until, you know, 6 or something like that. And then I was like, I gotta run. I can't skip this. So I worked all day, and then my last call was done, and I headed out the door and got to experience how everyone else runs in this world at daylight
hours.
I
know people like that. Megan, she can't skip a run. Like, she starts getting antsy and scratchy.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, she's out the door. But you always tell people to eat 2 graham crackers before they go out in the morning or something like that. How'd you fuel for the afternoon run?
I'm not going to lie. That was crossing my mind the whole time. Because people are like, it's hard to fuel for afternoon. And I was like, it is hard. I just like kept eating random things. Like, I had breakfast and I had lunch. But then it was like there was this like... 12:30 to 4 that I needed to fuel. So I did. I had a few more graham crackers. I put peanut butter between those ones. And then what else did I have? I feel like I was just like grabbing random carbs because I was like, this isn't enough quite yet. Yeah.
I don't get how people run in the afternoon because my stomach, like, like when you get going, I want that sleep, empty stomach feeling, maybe with a graham cracker or two in it. But
yeah,
I really don't like, oh, I had a heavy lunch and then, you know, something else, and you're like, ugh.
And I had to shower twice. I'm like, who showers twice in one day? Like, how do you do that?
Well, did you wash your hair both times?
I did.
Oh, Megan, dirty.
See, if I have to do the double shower, I don't wash my hair in the morning. I just like pull it back, and then it's like, I mean, if I have to record and be on video, then maybe I'll take the time to wash my hair. But otherwise, it's just going in a pony and a hat on.
I love it. Well, I'd been laying in an ER bed all night.
In a pony,
I was like, I need to shower.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's you don't fair. Know what you could have on you.
You know, I'm like, we're probably going to have COVID next week.
All right. So I'm sure this was not the topic you wanted to cover today.
No. Maybe. Yeah. So everyone listening, this is Fuel for the Soul. We just dived in here. But typically we talk about all things hydration and nutrition and how it affects performance. And today we are talking about actually some of our biggest mistakes and how we've adjusted and learned from them and how it's impacted our performances.
I'll tell you what's not a mistake. I've been trying that Charlotte's Web CBD. And that's no mistake, baby. I love it.
So, yeah, we've all sort of been struggling with sleep. Megan with family stuff, us with travel, and we received the Charlotte's Web. They gave us a really nice package and with a bunch of different samples, but we all sort of reached for the sleep, I think, initially. And I have to say, I'm loving it.
I have never taken something that I've slept better in my life. Like, I was telling you, Meg, I was trying to ration it for when I go to Paris. And I was like, why are you rationing this? So I just ordered 3 more containers of it.
Wow. Just went for it. And let's just say this isn't an ad.
No. Maybe soon, but.
Yeah. Maybe after this.
Hey, Charlotte.
All right. But we're talking about mistakes that we've made. I think we should start with the one who makes the most mistakes, and that would be Megan.
Honestly, when Megan Featherston brought this up, I was thinking about how when we first started working together, I came into this thinking maybe there's a couple minor changes I will make through this process, but I'm nailing it 100% across the board. Like, I thought I was crushing it. And it turns out I was doing absolutely everything wrong. Like, I could list everything I was doing before working with you and after, and it's probably all changed. But I think the number one thing that I changed after working with you, Megan, is the hydrating and fueling long runs. and marathons and the actual race day.
Well, let's just talk about some of the results you were having before you were doing this. So you were running well. You had hit an area where you were starting to progress as a runner. You were getting down to close to sub-3 marathon, and your goal was all of a sudden sub-3. And all of a sudden you found yourself just kind of hitting a wall for marathon after marathon with cramps and just crazy stuff happening at the end that had you on the ground. Like one time, literally, I'm running, and she was so far ahead of everybody. I'm like, she's got this. No problem. She's won. She's going to be sub-3. I saw her at mile 17. The girl was flying. And then at about mile 20-something, she was on her side on the ground grabbing at her legs.
Yeah, so I struggled a lot with leg cramps.
She still won, by the way.
And just general bonking, I guess, is what we'll call it, after, you know, miles 18 to 22. Like, right around there is when everything would just sort of fall apart. And I even did a bunch of research on the leg cramping. I had convinced myself that this was a neuromuscular thing and that I had to just, you know, train harder in order to get through it.
Hot shots.
Would take hot shots.
Because Shalane was pimping those at the time.
Yeah. She was.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see her talking about it anymore.
Are they still around? I think they are.
I don't know. Putting cinnamon fire in your mouth.
But so this whole time, I was never truly carb loading. I was never truly hydrating. I was never taking enough nutrition out on the course. But I wasn't thinking about those factors, because when you have such a specific issue like your legs cramping, specifically in your calves, I don't think it's natural to think, this is a hydration fluid, like, lack of nutrition problem. You just want to figure out what's wrong with your calf. Like, there's an issue here.
Right.
And so I, you know, I kept doing the same thing over and over and over. And for 5 years, I would run a 302, a 306, a 300.
And we're not talking minutes, not 302. It was like 3 hours, 2 seconds.
Ouch.
No, that was one time.
Okay.
So one of the first things I think you probably told me was, you know, the pre-run fueling. And then I think you convinced me of the during-run fueling, which I wasn't doing on my long runs, because I thought, and I think this is what a lot of people think, is that if you can do your 20-mile runs with not much nutrition, think about how great you'll feel when you take the nutrition on race day. But so there's two main things that caused. One is, if you don't practice with the nutrition, as we know, then it's really hard to stomach that on race day. So I would get nauseous before I could even get down the minimal gels that I was taking. And then two, you can't really perform your best when you're not fueling out when you're training. So sure, I would finish my 20-mile long run, but I had felt like trash at the end. And then recovery is so much longer. And so it would take me like 3 days after a long run to feel great again. Whereas now, fueling before, fueling during, not only can you sustain paces longer, which makes you physically stronger on race day, it also mentally makes you more prepared for race day, because you get the confidence from a really good long run workout. And the other piece of it was the hydration, because I don't think I ever factored in the electrolyte salt component, because I knew that hydrating was important, but I think I was just assuming water was all you needed. Like, I didn't understand that the salt was such a big component. And so also back to race day, sure, I'm drinking a bunch of water, but it didn't have any salt in it, so I'm not really retaining it. So I was also convinced that the cramping had nothing to do with hydration, because we were hydrating so much. In fact, we went and got IVs at one point before a race. But again, it doesn't have that massive amount of salt that you need to hold on to before the race. So that was a big one that I also learned.
It's really funny to hear you saying this now, because, I mean, sure, we talked at the beginning, and yes, I identified some of the same things as things we needed to work on, but I don't know, it's just funny now to hear, like, all the background of it and a little more detail of it, and also to hear that you were skeptical of some of the things to begin with, because I think that's so true for so many people. So many people are like, is it really going to help, or do I really need this? So, you know, 2 years later, almost... I think it's been, I forget how long it's been. You're able to be like, no, really, like, I really didn't think this was going to be something. And maybe you wouldn't even look back on it and be like, this is a big nutrition mistake. But now, like, in hindsight, you can kind of see that, which is cool.
And for everyone else who is super skeptical, I have dropped 13 minutes off of my marathon time since making these changes.
But so. 13 minutes off a time that was low, like, you know,
like 3 hours, she's taking 13 minutes.
Yeah, it's not like some people drop like an hour. Like, yeah, some people drop an hour off their time, but they start at a very high number. You started a low number and were able to drop it a substantial amount of time.
Okay, wait, one final note on that too. The pre-race dinner, I would always have a burger and two glasses of wine. And I thought that that was... totally fine, because we had a coach who that was his like pre-race meal, and so I was like, oh, my coach does that, I should definitely beer, though, do that wine. Yeah, it was beer, but so I mean, that could not be a worse thing to eat, I think, before the marathon.
It's not the worst, but it, I mean, sure, it's got a high fat content, and then the wine doesn't help you sleep.
No, it's one of the worst. Yeah, I mean, that's what we want to eat after, not before. I think we've talked about that before, yeah.
One of my mistakes was worrying more about my weight going into a marathon. Now I don't even think about it. Like, we did just finish Tokyo, and I was like, I don't remember once being like, you know, what do I weigh going into it? Where I used to really think about that. So what would happen was, as taper started hitting, I was running less. I would cut back on food and cut back on carbs and cut back on stuff, trying to get a little bit lighter for race day. And I would go into it probably a little depleted energy wise. And, you know, I mean, one of the mistakes I still make, I probably should cut alcohol out completely, but I haven't. But the, you know, and then in general, I would say one thing I did different in Tokyo than I've ever done before was, normally, like, I kind of let the clock tell me or the mileage tell me when to take nutrition. And when I was in Tokyo, I was like, we were 3 miles into the run, and I was like, I'm kind of feeling hungry. So I was like, well, I was going to take a goo at 4 miles. And then I was just like, if I'm hungry now, just take it now. I said, there'll probably be something on course if I run out and I need something that I can grab. But you know, if I'm hungry now, that's a signal my brain's telling me to get calories in. So I went ahead and pretty much fueled, like, just by, and I know not everybody gets a hunger signal, but I did it at Tokyo. I just went, okay, it's about three miles. I had a goo. And then I was like, okay, next one, see if I wanted it 7 miles. But it was like getting towards six. And I was like, you know what? I'm ready for another one. And I figured if I can take in more, why not take in more? And I also did like three of them were caffeine Mortons, so I was loving that. But yeah, just kind of like not being as rigid and kind of like listening to some of the cues and knowing like that it's going to, for me, my system, it's going to be all right if I probably have more than I need. And I know some people get GI issues and probably that wouldn't work for them. But then I listened to you and saying that, you know, if you can take in as much as you can and it doesn't upset your stomach, more is better than less. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, I wasn't as concerned, but I also used to not pay attention to maybe how many calories were in a packet. And since I am bigger than Megan here, I think I need more, calories during a race.
For sure. I mean, we burn more more body mass we have, the more we burn when we're out there. There's also some really good research that the smaller the person, if they can take as much fuel as, say, you were, Thomas, that their performance is just unbelievable. You know, so sometimes we base it on size, winning. Sometimes we don't. Yeah.
I saw that study the other day. It was like smaller runners can, if they can take in more carbs, will benefit more. Was essentially
right. I mean, if you think about it, so if a small person is oxidizing a bunch of carbohydrates, they have more excess fuel to pull from, whereas someone like Thomas or I, who is a little bit heavier, like we're using more of that immediately, right? So there's not just as much available fuel for our bodies. So if somebody's really small, it's not necessarily, oh, you need less fuel. You're actually going to benefit more from more fuel than, like, say, someone who's bigger would. It's kind of fascinating.
They're always winning, the little people.
There's a reason the top marathoners are very small people. There's a reason.
Yeah, and I know, and we never want to get into like the weight thing is making you faster stuff, but it is when you see, you know, the really fast, you know, runners, especially from West Africa and stuff like that, that, you know, they're like wafer thin,
but they're genetically small, you know. That's the big thing. Like, my body frame weighs more than them. I'm never going to be that small, so I'm never going to try to make myself that small, you know. So I think we all just need to remember, like, genetically we're built a certain way and we fuel the best we can for it, you know. We don't necessarily need to change our bodies to look like these fast runners. It's just they're very genetically gifted on a lot of levels.
I also have to find out, I did something you're definitely not supposed to do marathon day. When we were in Tokyo, they had these little tablets on the table.
And oh God, where's this going?
I saw them and I was like, I'm going to eat one. I was like, I think it might be salt or something.
Can you imagine being mid-race, seeing a tablet, a foreign tablet on the table and be like, I'll try it.
Thomas would.
There was a bowl of them.
A bowl?
Yeah. That's the last thing I would do. Let me try this out mid-race.
So I ate it. It kind of tasted like dry Pepto-Bismol. But it was kind of chalky and stuff. But I was thinking maybe this is some form of sodium. I don't know.
Huh. We got to get to the bottom of what this was. I'm going to look into this. Yeah, so, was
watch,
it wrapped?
It was probably a hand cleanser. yeah, it was wrapped.
Okay.
It was in a clear wrapper, and it was kind of octagon shape. And I was like, now thinking about it, I'm like, what were you thinking? But then I was just like, yeah, let me try one of these.
This is why we all love Thomas.
So,
speaking of the Tokyo Marathon, they have, instead of Gatorade, what they have over there is called Pecori Sweat.
And beautiful name.
Everyone hated it. I thought it was great.
What's it taste like? Yeah.
Lemony start with a grapefruit finish.
If I look up the nutrition on it, it looks very similar to Scratch. It's higher in sodium. So I've told people, like, hey, drink it. It looks great to me. And some people order it and try it.
I loved it.
Did you?
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah. Robbie is blaming his nausea on that. I don't know.
Yeah.
A couple other people.
Yeah, everyone was like, I never want to see that stuff again. And to be fair, it's the worst name ever.
Like you're drinking,
you don't want to be
sweat.
Drinking Pecori sweat. Yeah. Exactly.
So, I mean, I think Thomas brings up a good point. I have had a lot of people, and honestly, mostly males, that want to feel light and lean on the start line, that are just doing dumb stuff with their nutrition the week before. And it kind of sounds like that's what you had done in the past too, Thomas. Like, oh, I'm not running as much. I don't need to eat as much. I want to feel light. I want to feel lean. Lean and light is fast. And then they're just starting the race completely depleted.
I mean, I think when we first talked, I would tell you that, like, towards the end of the marathon training, I was coming in on fumes as it was. And thinking that was, you were supposed to come in feeling depleted, and that's why you had try to get by on gels on the race day.
So both of your nutrition mistakes were leaving you really faded before the race was even over. So with those changes, you were able to finish races faster and stronger, which I love.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know that I've gotten faster, but I feel better.
Okay, so Megan, as the sports dietitian, I'm interested to hear what your mistakes are.
The whole preface of this was that recently I really made a huge mistake with my nutrition. And I was like, hey, guys, let's record an episode on our three biggest mistakes. It, like, came to me on a run one morning. So I'm me and screwing up as the reason behind this episode. So I'll give some history so that it makes sense And then, you know, we'll chit chat about what it was. So, spoiler alert, it has to do with iron. So oftentimes when I work with clients, I talk about their history. What has your iron done in the past? What have you done in the past? You know, I think history is very, very important to figure out, like, what do we need to do moving forward? So for me, I never really had issues with low iron or anemia, except for when I had two babies in 2 years and C-sections that lost a lot of blood. So I had some issues after that. So it was on my radar, but everything got back to where it needed to be from percent saturation and ferritin and all that kind of stuff. The last time I had it checked was the summer of 2022, and it was my ferritin was 77, and the rest of my iron labs looked phenomenal. And I was not supplementing. I was eating my normal diet. So to me, that was a very false sense of security that, like, I'm fine. I don't have, quote unquote, issues with low iron. I mean, how many times do we put ourselves in a bucket like, that's not my problem, you know? So not that I thought I was doing that at the time, but I clearly was. Like, I wasn't keeping really good tabs on it because it looked fine. My performance was fine. So that was the last time I had it drawn for a while. Now, I know I don't love eating meat, so, like, it's not something I cook all the time. So I know how our losses increase when we're training harder. So coming off of the summer, you know, so we lose iron and sweat. We lose it with higher mileage from foot strike hemolysis. We break down red blood cells, and to build them back up, we need extra iron. So the more we're training, the more we're sweating. As females, our monthly cycle, like, those three things are big losses. So when we're training harder, when I was going into Chicago training with Meg, I was like, I got big goals for this. Like, I should probably be taking a low dose iron supplement. Again, something I tell people not to do, test it first, right? Before you start supplementing. But I just grabbed, like, a low dose supplement, just the Fusol by Fiera. So it's like 28 milligrams of iron. So I did take that. I looked back to my Amazon orders. I went through two bottles. So I took like 60 pills in 3 months. So let's say I was taking it like 2 out of 3 days, like just kind of making sure I'm getting a little extra iron, knowing I was losing more. Great performance at Chicago. Felt great. No issues whatsoever. But then Chicago was over. And then we go into the holidays, and I never really thought about iron again. I felt great. You know, I'm training even harder. We're going into the Houston half. So we go and we run the Houston half. I had been sick with my kid's cold around Christmas time, and I just felt like I was not coming back from it. I was hitting my workouts, but, like, I thought my exercise-induced asthma was coming back. I just felt like I couldn't get enough air, and I was hitting paces fine. I just was like, man, this cold won't go away. My lungs feel heavy. My legs feel heavy. So fast forward to Houston. I missed my goal by a little, but I felt like trash the whole time I was running. And yes, it was a little bit warmer, but I came home, and I was like, something's wrong. Go get your lab work done. Get some eyes on this, Megan. Like, something's not right. So I go and get my lab work done, and my ferritin was 13, which is in the trash can. I always say anything in the teens is in the toilet. That's very low.
I don't understand. Like, the iron thing is very confusing because, you know, we get the inside tracker stuff done, so I get to see my blood work. Why does it shift around? Like, I'm a dude. I'm not getting a period.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand why iron is such a tricky little thing to track.
So, I mean, that's a good question, and things are going to vary a little bit, but obviously what we're eating, like, our diet changes. We don't always have as much iron, and iron is really tricky to absorb. Everything competes with iron for absorption, which we have episodes fully devoted to that. And it's hard from a supplement perspective to absorb it, so it can be really tricky, you know, from that perspective. So maybe your diet changed enough that it tweaked it, or training. I see people with different training loads that can really impact their iron. Some people are low in the summer because they sweat so much, and we lose iron and sweat, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you bring up a good point, though, because it's not just ferritin that we're looking at. We're looking at the full iron panel, because ferritin alone only tells a little bit of the story. So I guess, kind of as some background, ferritin is our storage form of iron. So anytime our body starts to dip too low somewhere and needs iron, it's going to go to ferritin. So we're going to see ferritin tank before we see anything else tank, which for most people that aren't running ungodly miles constantly and asking these high demands of their body, if their ferritin's low, they're probably not even going to notice, because the rest of the iron labs look good, but from a running standpoint, there's enough research to show us if our ferritin gets too low, we just can't carry enough oxygen throughout our body to perform at our finest. And I think that's what I noticed at Houston. Now that I knew that these labs, my ferritin was super, super low, like that's absolutely what I was feeling. Luckily, my percent saturation and my total iron binding capacity, none of that had changed since June. It was just the ferritin that tanked, and it tanked big. I mean, 77 to 13 is a huge drop.
I was going to say, that seems extreme. Like, yeah, of all of the blood panels I've had, I don't think I've fluctuated more, well, until recently, which went up, but I don't think I've fluctuated more than like 10 or 20. Yeah.
Now, granted, it was June to January, so it was a long period, you know, because I hadn't been checking it like I should have.
There's no, like we talk about indicator lights on the car. I don't feel like the times where I've been like, oh, my iron's low, it's because I have a really shitty performance. So it's not like I get that little warning light that says, hey, you're running low. It's all of a sudden, it's just like, boom, there it is.
So I think that's the biggest, like, my takeaway from all of this. I feel like I learned a lot about myself. That feeling that I feel like I have exercise-induced asthma, I know for me personally now, that's 100% my iron's too low. Because now that I'm supplementing and I got it rechecked, and in 4 weeks it came up to 25. So it takes about 2 to 3 months to get ferritin up. So I knew it wasn't going to be where it needed to be quite yet. But I already don't feel that way. My lungs feel totally fine. I feel like I'm getting enough oxygen. So that warning light for me personally, I'm going to remember that feeling because I felt that in the past. And as I think back, I'm like, I bet I must have been low then, you know? So I think if we do our lab work and stay on top of how we feel, how we perform, the symptoms that we have, we probably can figure out what that, you know, check engine light is for us when it comes to our iron. But, you know, it does take the investment in getting our blood checked and, you know, putting that all together.
What did you do specifically in the past few weeks to get it up so quickly?
So I whipped out the big guns, the Hemoplex, which is 85 milligrams of iron, which is obviously like triple the dose of what I've ever taken in the past. And then also, you know, if you get a full panel done, B12 will be on there. My B12 was normal, but low normal. So Hemoplex has B12 in it. So a lot of times if somebody's B12 is a little bit low and so is their iron, I like them to take that. So I took my own advice and started taking it. So I'm helping both of those things.
That's interesting because I feel like I've been a little sluggish lately. So I just figured I was down on iron. One of the things that I got back on the inside tracker that I'm going to send your way after this is my B levels were down.
Your B12 was?
Yep.
And that one's a quick fix. Like that can turn around a couple days because it's water soluble. It increases fast. Yeah.
Another question about your panels. So the fact that only your ferritin dropped and everything else stayed the same, like what does that mean?
So that means I caught it before everything else started to cascade down.
Okay.
So ferritin is where we're going to pull from to keep our percent iron saturation where it needs to be, you know? So that was, I mean, it literally, my percent saturation was 34 in June and 34 in January. So that to me was a breath of fresh air, even though knowing my ferritin looked like crap, that the other things hadn't been impacted yet. So, you know, again, looking back, I was able to figure out, like, why did this tank so fast? So this is good. I think you guys know this, but I don't know if anyone else does. So when COVID hit, I started working at my parents' house so they could watch my kids. So my mom made lunch every single day for me for like 2 years, and they make meat every day. And that stopped in August. So I think that was a huge piece of it. Like, I wasn't eating meat every single day in August, but then in August is when I was supplementing for Chicago. So then after Chicago stopped, I wasn't supplementing. I wasn't eating meat at lunch every day, and my training continued to increase. Like, I've trained more in the past year than I have ever trained that hard in any year in my life. So I think just all those things together was enough that it started to tank then in October, and I just caught it before the other things tanked too, which is what we want to do, right? We want to catch this before it's like, shoot, I actually have to scale back my training because my iron looks so bad, right? Because there are some points where we have to do that. So luckily, it didn't get to that point. So I did want to check it again just to see, like, out of curiosity what it did in 4 weeks. So it went from 13 to 25 in 4 weeks. So I'll probably do it again in like a month or two and just kind of see where it's at. But hopefully and get it back to that 70 range instead of 13.
That should be pretty good timing for Boston, too.
There you go, get right?
Just in time.
So I think, you know, obviously lessons learned here. Like, I think I'm a really good example of everything's fine. Why do I need to pay attention to this? It can change. Because I wasn't thinking about, oh, I'm not eating as much meat anymore. Oh, I did supplement for a while. Like, those wasn't crossing my mind until hindsight, you know, looking back at, like, why did this happen? So sometimes, you know, we just, I tell my group nutrition classes this all the time. If we're expecting our body to perform at its highest level and we're pushing our body to do more than we ever thought it could do, I don't care what pace that is, right? It's personal to what our body has done in the past and can do. We need to know what's happening with our labs and stay on top of them, because we're literally shooting ourselves in the foot if we're trying to train so hard and there's something like ferritin that's low or B12 that's low or vitamin D's low and puts us at risk for stress fractures. So it's really important, you know, if we're really getting after it, to pay attention to it all.
I love going and getting my blood checked to make sure everything's good, because it's just a nice way to understand like what's happening and why you're feeling certain ways. Mm-hmm. And it's even beneficial when you are performing really well to see what your labs look like so that you can make sure you always get back to that place if you need to.
Right. I wish I would have known what it was around the Chicago Marathon. Like, I wish so badly that I knew what it was, but I don't, because I didn't get it done. But you can just walk into most labs and get like an iron panel and ferritin, so you don't have to get like a whole panel all the time. So that's what I did this time. I just walked in and got.
Look, I'm the first person that the last thing I want to do is go, you know, go to Quest Labs, get blood drawn, you know, wait for those results to come back. Like, it's a hassle.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But it has been beneficial over time, especially on identifying. Like, the worst thing for me is I would have good training and then just bomb at my race. Part of it's probably psychological. Part of it is also, you know, whether or not I had my levels up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worthwhile to go ahead and do that, even though it's expensive and takes time.
No, I will also say, though, with all of the travel like that, I'm really bad about taking my supplements, because I don't know. It's just when you're like traveling, you forget what day and time it is. And then
it's 2 a.m. there.
I'm like, did I take my pills yesterday, today? I don't know. So I feel like I got to get back into a routine, especially after this conversation of taking my iron, because I know I need to supplement because mine goes down really fast.
And I've been doing it almost every other day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, should I just skip it and go straight to daily?
Send me your labs. I'll look at them. Yeah.
All right.
And see where
they're
going
to make you cry.
They're not going to make me cry.
Although my internal age was 4 years younger than I am. So
ooh.
I'll take that. Yeah.
That's awesome.
All right, so...
So even smart people make stupid mistakes.
Yeah.
Even your sports dietitian does dumb stuff.
Yeah, I mean...
We all do dumb stuff, and I think sometimes you just have to, like, take a step back and look at things in, like, a bigger, broader picture.
Instead of, like, you did where you just kept banging your head against that wall.
Yeah, I think you get so determined to reach a goal that sometimes you forget to just... take a breath, pause, and like look at the bigger picture and figure out like
eat a bagel.
What's actually happening here. So yeah, hopefully you guys don't make the dumb mistakes that we do.
So do you feel like it was very fortunate that we ran into Megan when we did?
I found Megan on Instagram.
She Why? Found me. What were you? What were you doing looking for her?
She had these great, freaking True Friday posts, and I was following her because I thought they were fun. And then we started a podcast, and I was like, we have to have her on. And then we talked to her one time, and I was like, this chick is amazing.
Aw.
And then now we're best friends.
Yeah.
And you've run well under sub 3.
Well under.
Both of you guys have been cranking out sub 3s.
I know. I got to get my training in line to keep up with Megan in Boston.
And for the rest of you who are not at the sub 3 level, I'll be here for you to, you know, bring that average up. You know, you want your 330, your 340. I'm there for you, babe.
Mm-hmm.
Or gentleman, whichever you may be.
Okay. If you guys have a question that we haven't answered, feel free to send us an audio message. Just go to anchor.fm. Now it's, what is it? It's Spotify for podcasters or something. I think it's changed.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can leave us an audio message or send us an email at fuelforthesoulpodcast@gmail.com, and we will answer it here on the show. Yeah, that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, peas and carrots.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Feather out. Well, I'll carry the show as usual.
As usual.
I don't know. We'll probably have to leave that part out.
That part's not making it. Yeah.
We haven't done that.
I think Thomas needs a muscle some days.
Yeah. Jeez, dude. You make my life so hard. Okay, can you just say your thing?
Yeah.